Deutsche Welle, die 77%.
Hello there. A very warm welcome to the 77% radio show where we hear the voices of the African youth. I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
And I'm Eunice Wanjiru. In this week's edition of the 77%, can catfish help address employment inequalities in Ghana?
We shall later hear from some young Africans from different academic backgrounds talking about governance on the continent and how they can contribute to good governance.
The debate about good governance is also happening on our Facebook page, DW Africa. So don't forget to join the debate and leave us your comments. But before the debate, let's head to Ghana. It's one of Africa's best examples when it comes to democracy. But Ghana also has its challenges when it comes to inequality. Despite the discovery of oil and the abundance of gold and other minerals, 1.2 million people are unemployed, most of them young people.
Now, even Ghana's president, Nana Akufo-Addo, recently declared the youth unemployment rate a threat to the country's national security. So instead of waiting around to get formal employment, some young people have opted to start raising catfish for sale. As Maxwell Souk now reports from the coastal belt, more and more of these youngsters are hoping to cash in on the aquaculture industry.
Pond manager Moro Shaibu Sepa is feeding his 5.5-month-old catfish. He has a broad smile on his face. He is already anticipating a good harvest from these fish, who are growing well.
I have about 4 ponds here, somewhere over there. Well, after this, we are going to restock it again.
After just 6 months, these fish are ready to eat. When Moro Shaibu harvests the ponds, it is enough to sustain his household for half a year, he says.
It's about 6 months. They are 5.5 kilograms now. Yeah.
Osman Amadou is 33 years old. Osman is a teacher and on the side works at rearing fish too, although he is still hoping that one day he might find work in the oil and gas sector.
Oh, it was my expectation to be employed there, but it was not solely because of the amount that you get there. But you know, over here in Ghana, when you are a teacher, you are not even much recognized. Even the placemats give a much recognition than you. Yes.
Moro Shaibu and Osman Amadou belong to the Alhamdulillah Fish Farmers Association at Kanguni, a community in the Elembele district of the Western Region. Now he struck gold with catfish. He has stopped dreaming about working in the oil and gas sector.
At the moment, I don't have any thought of going to work at that place because of this business that I've just put myself into. And recently, I went to Akosombo to be trained as a hatchery operator to be able to hatch the fish. So I'm here to just establish the center and start hatching fingerlings over here. So within a few years or time, definitely you come and see me as a fatty man, not as slim as you see me.
Aquaculture was selected for the Western region because many people already had expertise in the fishing industry and there is plentiful water here. The program is supported by UK Aid and Danida, or Danish Aid. Barbara Joliwahi is the livelihood support manager for the Western Region Coastal Foundation.
With the oil fine, every youth wanted to be employed in an oil and gas company. And they realized that they did not have the skills nor the capacities to do that. So what can they do? And that's where WRCF comes in. And that's what our project is all about. We are giving people alternatives.
The catfish arrived at just the right time. Marine fishing is declining by 12% annually in the area, according to the Fishery Commission. Ghana is now importing more fish than its fishes. In 2016, the country imported 60% of its fish at a cost of $136 million because of reductions in the fishing stock. At the local market in Kanguni, Fishermen see the decline in marine fishing as directly linked to the oil and gas exploration. John Akwesi, a young fisherman, explains.
Because of the gas, the oil and gas, if you go, it gets some, this thing, what do you call it? Some flowers be there for the seaside.
Femi Afeba, a fishmonger, agrees.
Hi, Asapulo.
It has really spoiled the river, my brother. It has spoiled it. First, I could sell up to 200 cedis daily. Now, how do I get that? If we knew this is how things would turn up, would have prevented them from exploring. We are really hurt.
At the moment, most of the catfish is being consumed locally. But as the industry picks up, the hope is that Ghana can start exporting its catfish too. Back at Kangoni, Moro Shaibu still has a big smile on his face. It beats mining any day, he thinks.
It's better than the Galamse. It doesn't involve any risk. I'm here, I will come to the pond in the morning by 8 o'clock, I'll come and feed them. In the afternoon, 1 o'clock, I'll come and feed them. 5 o'clock in the evening, I'll come and feed them. Then I'm going home.
Despite his joy, the rest of the population are slow to follow Moro Shaibu's lead. The majority are still hoping that they can land a white-collar job in the oil and gas sector. But if the catfish keep eating at the rate they are, they might be about to change the perception of aquaculture very soon. For DW, this is Maxwell Souk in the Western Region of Ghana.
African youth are the majority on the continent. Well, 77% is a majority. And many are contributing to positive change the best way they can. So, Eddie, you did catch up with some of this African youth, young academics from the African Good Governance Network located in Bonn in Germany. Can you tell us more about your meeting?
Yeah, definitely, Eunice. Well, we mainly talked about good governance on the continent. They all came from various academic backgrounds. There's Grace Akinwende from Nigeria, who studied maths, so a young female mathematician there. Olushon Tanimomo, also from Nigeria, with a background of intercultural Anglophone studies. Then there was Prosper Maguchu from Zimbabwe, who studied law, human rights and corruption, and Jerome Ba from Ghana, who studied chemical engineering. Well, they shared their knowledge with us and their thoughts on how they, as individuals, could contribute to good governance in Africa. It is said that ladies first, so Grace, the mathematician from Nigeria, sets the ball rolling. Take a listen.
Talking about good governance, I mean, whatever field you are, you're a mathematician, you're a doctor, I mean, you still live in the country, we all have to contribute to the development of the nation, right?
What do you want to be your role exactly when you think about it, you as Grace?
Yes, maybe one day I could be involved in making good policies that will aid the development of the country. Mm. I mean, based on my scientific knowledge, based on my research, I mean, contributes to policies that will improve technology in the country, improve the economy of the country and all that, yeah.
Technology, economy, these are two words that we definitely need on the continent to help boost it. But if I'm to come to Prosper Maguchu from Zimbabwe, but your background is law, human rights and corruption. What do these words mean to you?
Law and corruption and human rights are interconnected and interlinked. Although not many people are acknowledging that. Mm-hmm. You can actually see that in the case of Africa, some of the things that we're calling human rights violations are actually as a result of corruption. So there is a clear link between corruption and human rights to an extent that they have become, you can use the words interchangeably, which unfortunately is not the case in the global south, where we have human rights that are independent from corruption, because corruption here isn't a big thing. As you said, that corruption is really a big thing. It is indeed in the global south, in Africa in particular. So these are really big issues. Corruption, human rights, they are more or less two sides of the same coin.
What new thing are you really going to bring on board?
The reason why I am here in Deutschland is because I was doing my doctorate degree, which I completed. And from there on, I hope that I will contribute to the fight against corruption And we need ideas. We need new ideas in particular, because corruption, unlike other crimes, to borrow from the military, it's a moving target. Mm. It changes speed and height at the same time. Mm. So you have to constantly come up with new ideas, one of which, during my studies, I discovered that we should acknowledge that law and corruption are not binary oppositions. We can have law and corruption working hand in hand. For instance, we can have our leaders making a law that will protect their corrupt deeds. So we have to know that first we have to analyze the law in order to come up with effective mechanisms to deal with corruption. So that's one of the areas that I can contribute. Use my knowledge to analyze the law to make sure that it becomes effective to keep corruption. So there again, we can make the connection between law and corruption.
Also, Olusegun Tanimomo, you're from Nigeria.
Yes, I am.
Ghana Jollof or Niger Jollof?
Niger Jollof, Fairvalley.
Definitely not. Definitely not. But your academic background is intercultural Anglophone studies.
Yes.
Now, my background is I basically rounded up my studies with journalism and media across different cultures. Mm-hmm. Whenever you mention culture, it is very complicated.
The first thing I tell people is culture is a construct to a large extent, and culture is not static. Let's take the issue of homosexuality, for example. The first thing you hear is, it's not African culture. And then you begin to ask, what exactly is African culture? When exactly is this African culture fixed in history, such that what you're talking about is something that happened in the 19th century or something? But culture evolves. So I think each generation has to like define its own biographies. You have to like define your own culture and say, okay, yeah, now at this particular point in time, this is what our culture is. Like Nigerians begin to hear, okay, there's a culture of corruption and things can't change because, I mean, it's like a culture, but no, culture is not that rigid thing. Culture changes, culture evolves, and we shouldn't just be prisoners of culture. When I was growing up, it was kind of frowned upon for a lady to wear trousers. Now you see ladies wear trousers even to churches and mosques and things like that. And, you know, so it's changing. So 10, 20 years' time, things might change.
Let me come to Jerome Pan. Your background is chemical engineering.
You are from Ghana. Recently, we had an issue where we had so much sulfur content in the fuel. Now, what does it really translate? The emissions from these sort of has a limit and has health implications for the people who often are affected by it. Where do I come in here as a chemical engineer? I can help determine the content of the sulfur in the emission so that I'll be able to advise as to the level of sanity of it. Or two, I could come in again to find a way that this content can be reduced in our fuel, that the impact on the health of the people would be reduced.
For instance, still talking about Ghana, where there's still more and more oil fields being found. I mean, your role will be very important in there. And isn't it just nice to have Africans ourselves, you know, delving into all of these to be able to solve our own problems then? What do you think of
Definitely,
that?
Yes. It is very nice. If you take it, for instance, the University of Cape Coast has taken the lead to train in oil engineers in that aspect so that at least we have majority of our own people on the ground. And surely from this program, I know definitely I'll be back in the Oil and Gas Research Institute of that university so that we'll be able to train people to come up with our own ideas as how to manage the oil that we find in our country.
Let me come to you, Grace. I've had so much male-based voices in my ears. So let's come back to your role. We're talking about women empowerment and all of that. As a lady in Africa and being Nigerian, the most populous country on the continent, what do you sense in terms of women empowerment?
I think a good job is being done. I mean, for some time now. Some years ago, I was in a project that was sponsored by World Bank to, I mean, introduce or to encourage girls in science, girls in mathematics. I mean, I've been involved in this kind of project. And it's good when we catch them young. I mean, if these girls don't go to do science, how do we expect women in science, for example? So a lot of work has been done, women in STEM and all that. And talking about women empowerment generally, I mean, there's also a lot of work being done in gender roles, I mean, in the society and all that. So I think doing more of this will get us on board because I think we need this order of the population, women.
To come to Prosper from Zimbabwe, I mean,
There's a new government. You excited about that, no?
It's indeed a good thing, having a new administration after almost 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's a breath of fresh air, isn't it?
To an extent.
To an extent. You say to an extent because you're not really sure if things are really going to change that much, or?
They actually haven't really changed that much.
Mm. Why is that, you think?
Well, it's the old guard that is still in power.
Mm.
Yeah. So it's still ZANU-PF in power, and Mugabe might not be in the place of a president right now, but Mugabeism is still much intact. It will take perhaps maybe even a generation to get rid of the Mugabeism politics. Mm. So there haven't been much change. But nevertheless, I mean, I'm a bit optimistic that we might be able to get there.
Some say it's more like old wine, the same wine in just a new jar. So no matter for change, as you're saying. But I mean, elections are coming up, though, in Zimbabwe. What do you envisage?
Well, not much. I think ZANU-PF might, that is Mugabe's party, might even regain more seats in parliament because now the opposition has been weakened, and also people are willing to give the new sort of new administration a chance.
Mm.
And then again, elections are at the moment not only necessary, but they are also imperative because what happened in Zimbabwe can be classified as a coup.
Mm.
So the new administration should, and they ought to have an election so that they can give legitimacy to themselves.
Africa boasts some of the very old leaders on the continent. And I mean, we have Zimbabweans or other African youth like you, young, vibrant, energetic, new, fresh ideas. Do you think the youth should be doing more to attain such leadership positions to, you know, propel their country forward?
Indeed, we should. And being a youth, I don't like the politics of entitlement to say that because I'm a youth, then I should be the one who should lead because I'm a youth and we are in the majority.
Mm-hmm.
We constitute a larger percentage of the population. Right now in Zimbabwe, we actually have the old guard, very old people, and
mm-hmm.
then we have quite youthful people who are also trying to get into power. But apart from their young age, they really have nothing concrete to offer.
Mm.
So in addition to that, being youthful, we should also try to equip ourselves, try to learn, try to come up with fresh ideas and not just want to be in power because we think that we are entitled by our large numbers to be in power. Let's not find comfort in numbers, but let's try to find comfort maybe in new ideas.
Nice way to end that interaction there. Let's find new ideas and ways to ensure good governance on our continent. You're still listening to The 77%.
The debate continues, and it's now time to hear what you've been saying on our DW Africa Facebook page. So we asked, do you think politics in your country would change for the better if more young people got into government? And as always, we received many comments from you. Eddie, what are some of the comments we have?
Oh, so many comments indeed, starting with Edgar Pelu. He says, yes, it would, because most of the old leaders still have colonial mentality. The younger people see the truth and want change.
And one Emmanuel None is saying values in people than age is relevant for governance.
Interesting one there. Alex Malunga says we need more young people to get involved in running the affairs of the country since they are in majority. The young generation is more enterprising, energetic and innovative.
And Brian K. Yune F. is saying young people in politics have proven more effective than their older counterparts. I believe they really should be given a chance.
Well, hopefully that happens sooner than later. Mushing Nsubuga says, unfortunately, the young people are some of the most corrupt in government agencies. It is not about age, but transparency and responsibility. Interesting one there, Eunice.
Yeah, it's clear that we have yes and no people agreeing that it's good to have young people, and some say the young people won't bring any change.
Mm-hmm.
But William Minter Wiafe is saying it's not about youth inclusiveness, but integrity, honesty and fairness to all.
You can understand where this whole debate is going. Like you said, yes and no, but most people are saying it's not about being young, but it's about what ideas do you have to bring on board? What real change do you have in you to bring it on board?
Well, that's all we had time for on this edition of The 77%. Make sure you keep the debate going by visiting our Facebook page, DW Africa. You can also listen to this show and previous editions by visiting dw.com/77. Thank you for keeping us company and hope you enjoyed the debate. Until next time, I'm Eunice Wanjiru.
And I'm Eddie Micah Jr.
Bye from us.